Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Kia ora, nau mai, haere mai, and welcome to the last Aotearoa Rugby Pod for the year. It's been a cracking year of rugby, and we've got some awards to give away. So with you one last time until next season kicks off, I'm Ross Carl. Joining me, as ever, James Parsons, Bryn Hall. Big year, lads. Jipper, you probably, well, I don't know how many rugby games you watch this year. Can you even put a number on it? If you average it out over the space of a year, about 1,000?
Mate, I couldn't tell you, but I have watched a lot of footy this year. It is, it's been quite a long season, but it's been an exciting season. I suppose that's a great way to start off the show, is to thank, you know, I suppose the players, the admin staff, the management, the coaches, in a real trying time under COVID, they've put together a hell of a season for us as spectators to enjoy.
Brett, it's not easy, is it, during these times to make this all happen the way it is? You know, can you give us maybe a bit of insight into what the players have to go through in order to make this all happen?
Yeah, it is. It's unfortunate. I think you kind of get used to it now with COVID being in and around, and obviously the new variant that's coming around, which could, you know, derail our Super Rugby Pacifica for next year. But hopefully the powers that be are working behind that, because I think, you know, for us as players, I think moving forward to next year, it's really important to be able to play the Australian teams at Drua and the Moana Pacifica in a full competition. But whether we go back to Aotearoa or there's two separate competitions to start the season, that might be a solution moving forward, because obviously with the new variant around. But I think more so it's just been adaptable, I think, Ross. I think it's been adaptable, and I guess knowing that COVID's around, and you know, it's not going to be smooth sailing as we've seen probably the last 12 to 24 months. So, but we're fortunate enough that we've been able to play rugby, and as for the consumer to be able to play, we've been able to play rugby and put on a product for our fans, which I think most importantly is what, you know, we want to do as players, because these have been trying times, and I think for us to be able to give back and still be able to play rugby, it's been massive for the old mental health and being able to give people something to enjoy to. But hopefully moving forward 2022, we can get a bit of normality moving back, not just with the international schedule, but I think with Super Rugby and more so all around with competitions in the world as well.
We're just dying to see Brent Hall back on the rugby field more than anything. See a couple of those skip passes to the wingers from the Crusaders, maybe another title for the Crusaders next year in Super Rugby Pacific. You know, it's been a long time, Brent.
Mate, it has, and I think, it burns a little bit more. I think, you know, I've been fortunate enough to do it for a while now, but I think any time you do get taken rugby away from you, for even though it's a short period of time, you do get itchy feet. So, you know, I look at the Harbour boys, the Counties and the Auckland boys that didn't get an opportunity to play in the NPC this year. I can only imagine that those boys will be raring to go, and I've even seen on the Blues page, you know, those boys are training together already, so you can just see that a lot of men are ready to play, and it's going to add more fuel to the fire coming towards next year, which is going to be a massive season with the new competition being available for next year.
Okay, so this is our second year doing an awards show on Aotearoa Rugby Pod. This year we're going to bring in a prize. Unfortunately, because of COVID, it hasn't arrived in the mail yet. The Bryn Hall yellow bib for getting away with not doing contact training goes to our number one player of the year across men, women, the world, whatever it is. Wait for it, guys. It's going to be great to receive the Bryn Hall yellow bib. But first, we'll make our way through domestic tries of the year. We'll look at the World Rugby Awards. We'll also talk about the eligibility through the show, the change in the rules, which are obviously going to help the island nations out big time in Test footy. We'll have a look to next year, and that'll be pretty much us for the season. So let's start up front, Jipper. Let's look at the domestic male player of the year. Who's your pick?
It's a tough one. I think there was a number of guys that stood out. I thought Luke Romano was really strong. James Tucker as well, a couple of locks there. But I ended up going with Stevie Perifetta from Taranaki. Just he was sensational from game one all the way through to the final. His ability off the tee, but also his ability to inject himself from the back was exceptional, and really put Taranaki on a 10-0 run, and with the championship to boot. So I think he was the best performing player at MPC.
No surprise it's a Blues player there. Bruno, who have you got?
No, look, I think it was very warranted. So I had Stevie P as definitely one of those people. I also had Eddie Inardi, who I thought was fantastic with the Hawke's Bay, and was really was a massive part for them being so successful this year. But I think for me, I've actually had bro. I picked Brett Cameron. I thought Brett Cameron was outstanding for Manawatū, and even for the fact that he couldn't play in that final, which you probably saw was probably the little bit of the difference in that championship final with him not being able to play. Look, I think the fact that he was down in Canterbury with the Crusaders, and look, things didn't go his way with being able to play as much as he wanted, but look, I think his performance is more so in his running game, his ability to be able to game manage, and had taken the learnings that he had from the Crusaders, and that one test with the All Blacks. I thought he was, definitely the standout player for me. And so for me, it was Brett Cameron, and it's unfortunate that he's had to go to Japan, because look, I think he was playing probably his best rugby of his career, and it's unfortunate to see him go.
Fair play to him too. He started off with a hiss and a roar quickly going up to the All Blacks, and I don't suppose it's easy to persevere after having to go through that and then start again. So big ups to Brett Cameron for the way he's battled on and come up with a big performance this year. What about in the women, FPC? Who is your player of the year this year, Jipper in the FPC?
Well, it's I suppose a little bit of an outside one, but centre wing for Waikato and Kelsey Tinetti. I think she's got a massive future. Still at school, I think. So she's a real, I suppose, energy player. Brings a lot of impact and decisive plays in the game. And obviously, with my relationship with the coach, James Semple, he speaks extremely highly of her, and thinks she's got a massive future as well. So she carved up all year.
You in the same boat there, Brenna?
I thought she was outstanding. I thought she was great, and I think it's definitely a good player to pick. But I actually picked someone from Manawatū. I think Karis Dellinger, the first five out of Manawatū, was outstanding for them and was a massive part around their success. And look, I've obviously picked Brett Cameron, and I've obviously picked Dellinger from Manawatū. But look, I just think talking around first fives for the future, she's been in and around that kind of environment, coming up through that system, and I think just with the back-to-back performances she's been able to put through consistently, especially this year with that dominant Manawatū team. I probably see it as a position that she's been watched for a little time now, and the likes of Brazier that are up at the next level. I think it's a great opportunity for her moving forward. I wouldn't be surprised if she's a girl that that plays in that Super Rugby competition, and then there could be a possibility of her jumping into that Black Ferns team later that World Cup year.
Well said. Are you pushing for a green and white hoops jersey, are you?
Apparently it's just kind of worked out that way, hasn't it? But look, you got, especially in that competition, the Farrah Palmer. I thought they were, they were the best team in that championship comp, and look, she was one of the focal points in that team for sure.
What about Super Brin? Who do you like out of Super? Who was your number one?
Yeah, I had a couple. Look, I think Artie Sevier, he had a great year, and no doubt he's actually going to be probably nominated for World Player of the Year. But I think more so when we talk about New Zealand players, international players of the year. But then I think Cody Taylor was massive in Super Rugby Aotearoa, especially. He had some outstanding performance and was probably one of the best players in that comp. And then I had David Harvilli as another option, who I thought was outstanding and fantastic in their number 12 jersey, and getting that kind of, I guess, game time at 12 and been able to play consistently. But I actually went for Damien McKenzie. I thought Damien McKenzie, especially in Super Rugby Aotearoa, there were a lot of times where he won the game on his boot, and then the fact that he was going from 15 to 10. Look, I don't think the Chiefs win a lot of those games without Damien. His ability to be able to play 10 and 15 and getting some massive goal kicks in that Super Rugby Aotearoa competition.
Yeah, he was superb, wasn't he? Jippo, what about you?
Yeah, look, I one of my options was Damo. I think Dalton Papali'i was really strong throughout the whole campaign. Artie Savea, as Bryn alluded to. But I think Davey Havili, purely for the impact he had. When he was missing in Trans-Tasman, it was a noticeable hole, because of what he delivered so well in Super Rugby Aotearoa. And I just think, the form that he had going through the whole of Super and then into those first few test matches, he was just on fire. The whole comp. So I think he's a worthy winner.
And it showed in his All Black selection in the end, didn't it, Bryn? Like, you just couldn't ignore him.
Yeah, you couldn't. You know, he was warranted on his selection. You know, for a guy that had gone through a couple of years, arguably you'd think he should have been in and around that environment with just how consistent he was and how influential he was for us in the past 3 4 years. But you know, for the fact that he played really really well in that Aotearoa, and like Gyp said, we did miss him massively in that Trans-Tasman competition, especially in that last game when we played against the Rebels with a late call out in that game. But yeah, then obviously played really well during that series with the Fijians and the Tongan game as well. And then again, I think it was more so just getting the opportunity to understand what it is to be a 12 at international level. So look, I think he'll be relatively happy to be back in that environment, but knowing Dave, he's a competitive guy, and so he'll want to be able to take the learnings and the experiences of, probably those last two test matches and even the South African test matches moving forward into 2022.
What about coaches? There's obviously some teams that have done some incredible things this year. The Blues, obviously built towards something they've been building to for a long time and got that title, Jipper. Leon McDonald on your list?
Yeah, he's definitely there. Leon's there. I think Ross Philippo as well with the Waikato NPC side, and I suppose the adversity they faced with having to leave Hamilton and base themselves away from home and take it all the way was pretty exceptional. And then I think Scott Robinson, another title, and Clayton McMillan, what he did with the Chiefs. I mean, there's plenty of options here in New Zealand, but I think what Leon did, obviously close to my heart, so it's a little bit biased, but I think what he did for us in the Trans-Tasman, coming off the back of a really probably below par Super Rugby Aotearoa, and to bounce back and get a title in that Trans-Tasman was massive.
Where are you going, Bryn?
Yeah, look, I had obviously Rangi winning Super Rugby. Obviously, Trans-Tasman was big for that Blues, for that big Blues team. Obviously, with the growth that they've had the past couple of years, he was definitely a worthy nomination for me. But you obviously got Razor, who's won a championship as well. And then I thought Clayton McDonald, what he did previously with the Chiefs last year, who went on that horrible run, and to be able to get them into a final for Super Rugby Aotearoa, I thought was a massive achievement. But I've actually gone locally. I've gone Willie Rickards for Taranaki. I think anytime you can, go undefeated in a season, and if you look around the previous season before, they didn't do so well. And so to be able to win the championship and to win 10 games in a row, it's a massive achievement. So I've gone Willie Rickards from Taranaki as my coach of the year.
Solid. Now, one of the things the fans always love is the try of the year. I mean, I'm always in the Luke Jacobson camp, with anything that happens anytime ever. Pity that he can't be our international player of the year, but you like his try that he had this year? Was it against Argentina, James?
Yeah, it was. A little quick tap from TJ Perenara, and they go the distance with that ridiculous offload from Bodie. I think everyone will remember that. And it was just a day that they were on song and scoring points from, deep within their territory, and it was a pleasure to watch. Other option as well, I suppose, is Sever Reece's one against the Welsh. That was pretty exceptional late in the game with guys like Artie and Rico putting in big efforts there to set him up. So, but yeah, Luke Jacobson is the number one for me.
Nice. It was a bloody good try, and of course Luke Jacobson should be on every list in this entire thing because he is just such a standout player. Bryn, not that I'm biased, Bryn, who are you going for? What are you going for?
It is. Look, it is hard to go past Luke Jacobson. I did have a notable mention with for Eddie Ainaadi against Tasman when they played them down in Napier. I think a lot of times it went down that short side. I think it went through four or five hands to different people, and then Eddie scored in the corner. So he was one notable mention that I did have. And then Sever Reece is like Jip alluded to. That was a fantastic try, and the fact that the game was a. At a good time and bringing on the bench, and we talked around that game, the bench coming on and really added an impact, and Sebi was at the forefront of that. And then, but I think you can't go past Luke Jacobson's try. Look, the flick pass that Beauden Barrett did to score that try, it won't be just talked about this year, but it'll be talked around for the rest of time with how great that try was, and so many people were involved in that try as well. So I've got to go Luke Jacobson, your man as well, Ross.
But so good. So good. If only we had another yellow bib for Luke Jacobson. But Bryn, let's get straight onto the yellow bib. Male player of the year in New Zealand, who have you got?
I've got Artie Sevier. I've got Artie Sevier. Look, I think he doesn't need a yellow bib. I need a yellow bib whenever I go up against him. So whenever I see him anywhere near me. But now, look, I think look, we talked around Super Rugby with how influential he was with the Hurricanes and the fact and taking on that captaincy role. I thought added a string to his bow and having an understanding of what it is to be captain, and then. You come into the All Blacks season. Look, if there's one guy you wanted on that you'd put in that starting 15 to start with, it'd be Artie Sevier. Not only just his presence that he has physicality wise, but you know he does this, whether it's a pick and go through the middle and getting those really hard yards, or it's a big turnover in big Test matches against Australians or other Test matches that he's had this year. He's been so consistent, and for someone that plays so abrasive and so physically like that, the ability to be able to play those Test matches throughout the year, I think Artie Sevier is my player of the year for New Zealand.
For you, Jibber?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of guys that have really had strong efforts every time they've gone out there. I think Dalton Papali'i's really stepped up at Test match level. Artie definitely has been huge year for him as well. Jordy Barrett, couple of match-winning goals and big performances at fullback there. But I've gone with Rex. I think Rico's had a massive year, not just an attack, you know, like his ability to, you know, sort of put the team first, whether he's at centre or he's on the wing, you know, he did what was asked of him in those moments. But more importantly, the efforts we saw from Rex on D. I don't know if you remember in Perth, he chased back about, you know, 40 or 50 metres to stop a try. He did it the other day against the French as well. And we're seeing more often, I suppose, his speed allowing him to make some real big defensive plays as well as the attacking stuff. So I think Reece should be really proud of his year and what he delivered for the All Blacks.
They really looked good when he had ball in hand, especially when they were trying to attack out of their own 22, their own 40. He was a major difference for them, wasn't he?
Yeah, it's just that injection of pace, man. It's just so lethal. And that's what, like, well, we haven't seen it. You know, I suppose in the defensive side, we've always known him for the attacking, but some of those, I think he got up to 39 Ks or something when he was chasing back. I can't even remember. I think it was Tom Wright or Corden Betty in Perth there, but he's a freak when it comes to that stuff. And the best thing this year, more often than not, we saw him pull it out in big moments and score good tries, but also save them.
39 Ks. Brenner, what are you clocking?
Nothing around there, mate. Nothing around there. Absolutely nothing. He'll give me a bloody meter head start and I still won't catch him. He still won't get off. He'll catch me, sorry.
Do you all know exactly what your top speed is in kilometres per hour, Bryn? Is it given to you? Everyone knows how fast they are at top speed?
Yeah, there's the GPS units that you wear in trainings and in games. So, look, yeah, any top end speed, it's accumulated, and then you get to be able to see it at the end of the week. And so I remember a big fan, big dripper on my left actually would always see their GPS numbers and saying how fast he got in trainings and how fast he got into his game, just seeing how quick he was. So it's good competition as well, you know, good competition within the boys, and there's always a good bit of banter if you're slow or not, or if you've got a bit more speed. So it's always good.
Go on then, Jipper. What is it?
Oh, no, I actually can't remember what my top one is, but I'd say I probably hit my fastest would have been, I suppose, against Auckland. There was an intercept, so I had a bit of metres to get wound up. And then I suppose against the Waratahs, I scored a try from far out, which would have led to a few high Ks. But I actually can't remember. I think, to be fair, I got most of my fastest times at training. I was blowing too much in the game.
So what's class then? What's world class? How do you know that this guy is super fast in a rugby context? Like, what is the pace that you want to be above?
Well, look, I think if you're an outside back, that anything over that kind of 34 to 35 k an hour, right job, that's the kind of the real elite.
Yeah.
Kind of.
There's another measurement as well. They do meters per second, and I think if you're over 10 meters per second, you're humming. You know, yeah. Like that's a good 100 time, and I'm pretty sure Reeks is close to 11 was his best. I saw him get at training, 11 meters per second, which is going.
Because would you say, Jimmy said 38, 39 k? That's what Rico was at, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. In that game.
Yeah. So like, just to give it back, so Will Jordan's the fastest set out at the Crusaders, and he's like 36, 37. So it just shows how fast Rico is. If Rico is at 38, 39, like Jip's saying, then it just shows that you really know how fast Will Jordan is. He's an extra 2 kilometres faster. So there you go, Ross. That's how you know how quick Rico Ioane is.
That's incredible. Like 3 Ks an hour, you know, if you're going to crash into him, there's a big difference there, right?
But you can see it, that try scored against the French is like there wasn't much of a gap there, but he just, he's gone, and he can get up to that speed so quick. He doesn't need, 20 meters to get humming like this old bull. He can just get there straight away.
Yeah, speaking of this old bull, we're adding in another prize to this thing. Bryn, I just want to go to you first for who you think this might be. Retired player with the best rig in New Zealand. Who could that be?
I'll tell you what, mate. There's only one, the one and only on my left. If you talk around moments of the year, Ross, take aside rugby, the moment of the year is James Parsons at 20. Is it at 27, Joe? Is that
I
your
should.
username handle?
I shouldn't have put it up. I knew I was
Is
going to
that
get
isn't that,
Greg.
nah, mate? That was honestly the moment of the year. You got a guy on the left there that's sitting at 96, dripping wet and just ripped to bits. So that's been my
Mate.
moment of the year, Ross. No, none of
Yeah.
this rugby. It's been seeing Chipper ripped to bits.
Instagram crashed, like immediately crashed. The activity was right there. The trending, far out. I'm surprised that you're not off on an international modeling gig right now.
Well, to be fair, Richard Mayhew taught me if you can get your kid in there, it's almost acceptable. So, I've got my daughter in there, so it's, somewhat, he's one of the best of utilizing his children to get his rig out, old Rich Mayhew.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Such a caring, ripped up father figure. What a niche.
I knew I was going to get some grief, but it certainly got more attention than I thought.
Well, let's move on then to the World Rugby Awards. Obviously, they named a few people. I think there's a couple of questions about how it went down. Obviously, no New Zealanders made the list. Antoine Dupont, obviously, superb player. Michael Hooper probably should be there every single year. Mauro Toti, I think, is there every single year. And Samu Karevi had such a huge impact on the Wallabies, Chipper. Which one of these four guys do you think it's going to be?
Oh, it's hard because, like, I agree with you, Michael Hooper, man. Like the impact he has on games, how he's always sort of, injury free and just delivering both sides of the ball and just, gives it death to the last minute every time. Dupont, I think it's between those two personally. I don't think Karevi probably played enough footy to go past Hooper or Dupont, and I just think those two players have had more of an impact on, I suppose, games than a Toji, and I suppose Karevi's had massive impact, but he's only been there a few times. So I think Hooper or Dupont will get that.
Being a playmaker and open side obviously helps in these awards more than that. You don't see many hookers or props get these kind of things. Where do you reckon it'll go, Bryn?
Yeah, I think. Look, I think it's between Hooper, and Dupont. I think. I think Simon Karevi was outstanding in the influence that he did have in games, but he just didn't play that much. If he goes over to the India tour and consistently plays how he did during the Rugby Championship, then I probably think he'd be the front runner. And so Atoje, he's always going to be in and around there, and it just shows how consistent he has been over the last 3 4 years. He's always in and around that conversation now. But look, I think it's going to be Dupont. Just for the fact that how he's played through the whole year, and his combination with Ntamack has been world class. And the only reason why I say that Hooper's probably at the coming in second is just, and I know it's an individual based award, but I think for the fact that India tour, and look, I know it's not his fault with the performance that the Wallabies did put in. They were injury depleted and a few players didn't go over, but I think to the fact losing those test matches over there has to have some form of accountability around that. And so look, Hooper out and out is one of the best players in the world, but I think just for the fact that they're back into the tour for me, it just gives Dupont the edge and winning the best player in the world.
And I mean, the way that people talked about him, he obviously deserves it. He's been like that for a couple of years now. What about with the women? We've got Zoe Alcroft from England, Poppy Cleal from England, Caroline Bujard from France, and Loris Sansis from France. I hope I pronounced those two ones right. But where do you think we go, Jipper, on this?
Oh, I think you could go for anyone from England at the moment, the way they're playing. They're exceptional. But probably Poppy is the pick for me. I just think that team is extremely talented and great to watch. So, as I say, anyone from that squad is playing, the house down at the moment.
Same for you.
Yeah, I'm the same one. I'm the same on that one with Poppy. But then obviously I like Bouchard as well, from France. I like watching her play, and I think she played really well against the Black Ferns in the last two test matches. But look, that England side is scary. And we talked around how much do Black Ferns have to do coming into next year with how dominant they are. And Poppy was one for me that I thought was a really big standout. And that England team, what are they now, Ross? 18 in a row? 18 test
Yeah.
matches in a row? Is that it?
Phenomenal.
So look,
Phenomenal.
anytime you can win a test matches, just shows that England are the dominant part of the world at the moment with rugby and female rugby.
Now, we've touched on Will Jordan a little bit already, and you would think in any other year he'd be a lay down in his ear for this. The amount of tries he scored, the fact that every time he touches the ball, it's on for Will Jordan, both at, super level and at test level. He is just an absolute incredible talent. But Kellaway, Rhys Zammit, Smith, there are some good backs that have come in this year across Australia and Wales and England. What do you think is the way to go with this one, Jabba?
Oh, I agree. Rhys Zammit and Callaway are extremely talented young men, and have had, I suppose, massive years in terms of their career from where they were at the start to where they are now, and how well respected they are internationally. But I just can't go past Will Jordan, man. Like, some of
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The things he's pulled off this year are just freakish. Like, he is seriously talented, and I think, a clear winner for me. He's pushed hard by Callaway probably the most, in terms of breakout. But yeah, Will Jordan, man. Just some of the, even the ones he didn't score. Do you know what I mean? Like his assist and his work off the ball. Like, yeah, he should win that one, I'm certain of.
He's quite amazing. Is he also a high quality flatmate, Brenner? Does he live up to that same level Monday to Friday?
Oh, I'll tell you what, he's not the breakthrough flatmate, that's for sure. But no, he's good. He's good. He's no, he's good. He's good kid. He's grown up really, really fast, and so I think, I think just more so this year, he's taken it to another level. You talk around his influences in games and big moments, whether it be a chipper chase against the Welsh team, or it's off a counter attack and getting through the middle and breaking through, or even his work rate off the ball as well. He's world class there, and also defensively, he's made massive improvements. That department, which probably is one thing that he probably wanted to work on. But then I look at Callaway as well. Callaway's been had an outstanding year. Someone that's probably been earmarked for a while in that environment and over that side of the world, and now he's really had a great year. But no, look, you just can't go past Will Jordan. I think the tries that he's had, the ways he's scored them, the way he's influenced games, I think, yeah, it's Will Jordan for sure.
And I think the amazing thing about him, and it's such a good message to kids out there playing the game. Excuse me while I clear my throat. Will Jordan didn't make all of the rep teams. He was an undersized guy. He played halfback through high school. He wasn't that guy who was to the manor born at 14 that everyone's like, this guy's going to be an All Black. And then sometimes there is talent lying within people at schools that doesn't get recognized till a little bit later on when they've had the growth spurt and they've had someone commit to them and show them that interest, Chipper. It is still possible to get there outside of the system.
Oh, massively. And I think what it teaches you at that age is when you have a bit of adversity, you sort of learn how to work hard, and your want and your desire to get to the top is, a lot stronger because they've suffered that, I suppose, heartache earlier on. And I think that's what, like, these impacts that Will's having on games isn't by luck. Like, he's working so hard off the ball that he's creating more opportunities than not to be involved and have the opportunity to make a difference in these games. And I think that's a cornerstone of that growth and his work ethic through his younger years. He's still so young now, but you know what I mean? Like back through missing out on those teams is now probably his biggest strength.
Yeah, looking at the next award coming from the World Rugby Awards, the Coach of the Year. Now, obviously, Alan Bunting and Corey Sweeney from the Sevens team with their gold, you know, those guys are legendary with what they've done with that side over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. Dave Rennie, of course, is making the Wallabies look better and better and better, soon to hire Jipper within his coaching staff after all the praise he's been given this year. Simon Middleton from the England women, like, they look so slick. We've waxed lyrical about them. The other person on the list is Ian Foster, who, despite being on that list and winning a couple of trophies, is copping it sweet right now in the New Zealand media and in a lot of conversations around the place. Where do you guys think this should go? Obviously, they'd made some of these decisions before the latest results. Who wins this?
I think based on results, Middleton or Bunting and Corey Sweeney, you know, like gold medal at the Olympics, it's the pinnacle event. You'd have to think in this year that that's got to play a big part in picking this. But also, you know, we've obviously spoken very highly about the dominance of that English team coached by Middleton. So I think those are your two front runners.
Same for you, Bryn.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, you look at the Sevens coaches, I think the fact that they did win their gold, and, you know, that's the pinnacle if you're looking around in the Sevens, that's winning a gold medal. And so, you know, the fact of how dominant, if you talk around dominancy with the English woman, the dominance that the girls have had in the Sevens as well is massive. And then I think, you know, with Middleton as well, the fact that you can win 18 test matches and been able to be so consistent in doing that for a long period of time. Again, and it's not just the fact that they're winning games, they're dominating teams. And you look at the Black Ferns, you probably think are one of the top two in the world before going over. The fact that they beat them that convincingly in two test matches, you know, arguably probably the best team in the world, especially in the women's game. But anytime you have consistency around that for longevity, you've got to be rewarded. So I think it's, yeah, like I agree with Chip, it's going to go one or two ways that way.
The most entertaining coach of the year probably goes to Rassie Erasmus. But what about team of the year overall? Who's the team of the year internationally, Jipper?
Oh, it's a hard one because there's been a lot of inconsistency, you know, like throughout the year. If you look at the Six Nations, Wales obviously winning that, England and Ireland, you know, a couple of losses, and the French, you know, sort of, you know, awesome 1 week and then, you know, losing games last minute the next. So, and then we obviously know that the Southern Hemisphere teams really struggled, you know, on the end of year tour. So it has been a tough one. But I think the Springboks, after, you know, not having played for so long, then the Lions tour, and then, you know, yeah, they've had some losses, but, you know, for the most part, they've held up the world number one ranking. So I think they have to be the worthy team of the year for what adversity they faced coming off the back of no rugby together to put the year they've put in, I think was massive.
Some solid headlines from the box this year. Brenner, you like them as the best team of the year?
Yeah, I think so. But there's honourable mentions. I think you are right. There's been a lot of inconsistencies with the top teams, and it just shows how competitive, you know, within the Six Nations and then the Northern Hemisphere and Southern Hemisphere teams playing. You've got to give credit to Ireland. I think, you know, that performance against the All Blacks and the way that they did it, even though the scoreline doesn't reflect it, watching that game, you knew who the better team was physically and mentally that day. So Ireland definitely, for me, was a massive, enjoyed seeing them. But I think South Africa, anytime you can do the Lions series and be successful around that, and then coming into the Rugby Championship and finding their way through the early part of that competition, and then beating the All Blacks in that last game was a massive feat. And then going over to the Northern Hemisphere over there as well. Yeah, I definitely think it's South Africa this year. And you think about the preparation they've had. We talk around the preparation with other teams. We look at Argentina, who really struggled with the preparation side of things, and even the All Blacks, the fact in the last two test matches, just for a long tour and not being the usual status quo tour and year. But, you know, South Africa found a way to win, and for me, they're probably deserving of that number one world ranking in the world.
Totally. Now, moving on, we've had a couple of other changes in world rugby over the last little while, which could affect these rankings in the next few years. And that is the change in the eligibility rules, the ability for people to swap nations with a gap of 3 years if they've got parents, grandparents who are from their nation, or they're from there themselves originally. Now, of course, this is going to be huge for the islands. I think we all agree that this is great for Pacific rugby and that they can really call on the talent that's there. The other thing is that will it make the big change that is going to even everything up, Jipper? You know, is it enough? Is it a token gesture that will help? Is it something that's going to change it for all time? Do you think it's enough, Jipper?
Oh, I think it will help massively. You know, the type of player and the skill set and the professionalism that would be coming into these environments, you know. When you've got senior players, you know, they're like an extra coach, and we all know that, you know, most of the best sides are, I suppose, led really well, and there's a strong, you know, if we look at the current list, a strong number of leaders and skillful footy players coming to this environment, so that's only going to, you know, uplift everyone else around them. And I think we just spoke about the inconsistencies or the up and down nature of results. But how much more enjoyment and excitement has that brought to world rugby? Because you're actually turning up to test matches now and you've got no clue who's going to win because it's that tight. And this is only going to further enhance these test matches to be tighter, which has grown our game globally. And the product is more addictive to watch when, you know, you're unsure with who's going to win. So I think it's a great step in the right direction. I'm really excited to see some of these players represent their nation, their second nation or first nation, however they see it now. It's going to be interesting. Like, I don't know if it's enough or if it's not enough, but I'm looking forward to watching it unfold.
We've already seen Artie come out and say that he'd love to go and play for Samoa or Brin. You know, how many All Blacks do you think could possibly do that? And I suppose an extension of that question, does that change the way that players plan their careers? You know, do you look at it and say, well, I want to play for both of these countries. When am I going to do it? You know, it changes an approach to, what, a 10, 12-year career that most people kind of have that kind of span?
Yeah, I think it does. It opens up those avenues of being able to play for both nations. And so you think around it, you know, let's say, for example, you know, Artie, for example, wants to play, you know, 5, 6 years or another 2 years in New Zealand for the All Blacks and then decides to go overseas for whatever reason, as an example, you know, there is a possibility after that 3 years that he's going to have the opportunity to be able to do that. And so not just Artie, but other players will be able to have that opportunity. And you're right, Ross, you can start planning around playing for, you know, being an All Black, a Wallaby, English, playing for the English, but then having the opportunity to be able to go and play for your home nation or, you know, your birthright or your parents or your grandfather or grandma's from. So I think it's great that those avenues have been open, but I think, you know, first and foremost, that it has been open. It's just going to be so good to be able to have a competition and having competitiveness within the island nations, because we know what they give to world rugby, not just in the just for us as a country, but everywhere around the world. And for the fact that they're going to have the opportunity to go and play for their home nations and be competitive and be able to have a competitive product for them, I think it's a real pat on the back for the powers that be that we're able to get that over the line, because we've known for so long that that hasn't happened and it's kind of been turned away. But, you know, there were a lot of conversations that had, and I think it's great, and it's going to be great to see a lot of these guys that we want to see in the 2023 World Cup.
But there are some people who aren't happy about this when most of the world appears to be. Georgia, Uruguay spent a lot of time building up their local talent base. They don't necessarily have the connections to other nations the way that, you know, Tonga and Samoa and Fiji are so much a part of New Zealand society as well. You know, they're out on their own in a lot of ways, and they feel like this could cost them and their ability to qualify for World Cups and to become a threat to Tier 1 nations. Is that a legitimate gripe, Jipper?
Oh, look, I can understand their concern, but if they look at the, I suppose, the systems and processes they've put in place, both those nations are improving, and I suppose that's what they need to just focus on is nailing their own systems so that they can get the very best out of their players. And then as we've spoken about in length, if there's players that have a strong connection to Tonga, Fiji, Samoa, and it is their second, I suppose, international team they've played for, then I don't think anyone would want to stop that. You know, we have spoken about it on here is that they are Samoan Kiwi or Samoan Australian. And that's how they perceive themselves, and that's how they want to be represented. So for them to have the opportunity to go and do exactly that, I think is fantastic.
And that's probably it, isn't it? Getting an understanding of how this actually works on the other side of the world. It's not black and white when it comes to identity and nationality and family and all those things. You've got to really understand it, don't you? The other side of this, Bryn, is that players could swap between tier one nations. You know, Akita could go and play for Japan. Hoskins Atutu, I'm told, could play for England. James O'Connor and Quade Cooper could play for the All Blacks. You know, does that seem, I suppose when you open up a set of rules, you've got to do it that way, but do you think that that could legitimately happen?
Oh, look, I think the players, you know, James O'Connor and Quade Cooper, I don't think they're going to, you know, be playing for New Zealand anytime soon at all. But like, I think what it does, I think the main thing, it brings competitiveness to international rugby. And so we've talked around, you know, the six or seven teams that, you know, if there's a World Cup right now, we've talked around how the Northern Hemisphere teams have really jumped on board and moved up in an upward direction. Probably the Southern Hemisphere are lacking a little bit in that department. But then you add the Pacific Islander nations, you know, Fiji, Samoa, Tonga, and they have players of that caliber, which I think is really important. It's the caliber of players that you can bring into that environment and then be able to grow from that. So I think for world rugby and our competition, for us to be able to, you know, have more viewers, to bring more people in to watch rugby, the more competitiveness we have in international rugby, it's only going to be better for our product and for rugby moving forward and making more money and getting more eyes on the product, which is probably the most thing that we want as rugby players.
Yeah, it's good, I think, for the game overall. What about we look at the All Blacks for next season now? 12 out of 15 this year. Jipa, are they in a place where they can build from this? And how would you rate maybe out of 10 this year and where it lets them stand for next year?
Yeah, well, I think it can be judged on trophies. Like there's a lot of trophies in the cabinet, a lot of special key ones in the Bledisloe Cup and the Rugby Championship and a number of other one-off games. So I still think they're around a 7 out of 10. I know for their standards, they probably see it a little bit lower than that. But, you know, in terms of bringing back what matters, we don't like losing tests, but I think it could be a great turning point and an ability for them to take stock and move in the same direction that the team took in 2009 leading to the 2011 World Cup. And I don't think it, as I've said before, I just don't think it's as doomsday as it may feel at the moment for us. I think there'll be a lot of positive change to come off the back of it, and we'll be a better squad going into 2023. And look, I'm not just saying we focus on the World Cup either. You know, like we're an All Black team that wants to win every test, but it does give us the ability to take a longer look at this and make some shifts. Hopefully that are, you know, they impact us straight away. But if not, then, you know, we're building towards that World Cup.
And the key shifts, Bryn, what are the key shifts here for this team?
Well, look, I think any time, you know, we've had trouble in test matches, you know, you look at the couple, the loss against South Africa and then against Ireland and France, I think we've talked about it at length. And when the All Blacks are going really well, it's playing at high tempo and being able to get that ball out quick with Nagy or whoever's selected at nine and getting that ball out quick to our decision makers and our guys out on the edge and letting them do what they do. So I think it's been able to winning the breakdown and being efficient at the breakdown, like those Northern Hemisphere teams. You know, you look at the Ireland, the way that they would be able to hold on for the ball for long periods of time to be able to get a penalty or to go for goal or to be able to score tries off that quick ball. I think that's one thing that we need to get back to, and no doubt that's probably one thing that the coaching staff will be wanting to get better and being better in that for longer periods of time. And then I think also attacking off slow ball when we've got line speed pressure against us. I think the fact that we haven't been able to get that quick ball, it's been able to then attack off that slow ball. What does that look like? Has it been able to go through the middle like we saw in those test matches? Or is it going to a kicking game with the contestable mindset with off Nagy or off 10 crossfield kicks that we saw from Bodie and Geordie? So there are things that we have done throughout the year that we have been able to get better against line speed. But I think, again, it's just a continuation of being able to attack off that slow ball when we're not getting that tempo and being able to play at the high speed tempo that we want to. So I think those are two things that we can do. And I think probably the last one as well, it's being able to attack off the box kicks or contestable kicks that come at us. And look, I know some teams have played a lot more rugby. I look at France and Ireland who did play a lot of rugby, but I think, again, it is a continuation of trying to get better if the teams do want to kick against us and put us in contestable focus, we've got to be able to attack off that. What does that look like? Is it running, being able to build pressure, or is it kicking back on our terms and be able to build pressure like those other teams do as well?
What's your favourite moment? I'll go to both of you on this. Chipper, you first. Favourite moment, any level of rugby this year, what did you enjoy the most?
I think the 100th test, I know it wasn't the spectacle everyone wanted, but I think a special moment in time, that 100th test versus the Springboks, and the fact that we won it was important, I think. And, everyone was obviously disappointed it wasn't a free-flowing test match, but I think it was a test match fitting of the rivalry, just how hard fought it was and down to the last minute. So I probably enjoyed that the most.
For you, Bryn?
I had two moments. It was probably actually the Northern Hemisphere. The Northern Hemisphere tour was big for me. We talked about it at length, just how consistent and how good the Northern Hemisphere teams were, and I guess the learnings and the things that the Southern Hemisphere teams need to be able to adapt with the fact of how those Northern tours went. But that was one for me. But for me, my best moment of there was actually my old mate on the left, his commentary, Hawke's Bay, Taranaki, at the ground, the great ground in Taranaki. The kind of emotion that my old mate showed, I've even heard it recently, just the passion that Jipper you had, mate, on that day was definitely a highlight. It was the moment of the year for myself.
Well, that's nice.
You are good.
Well, maybe we should combine that with the next question, was what do you want to see in 2022? And now it's probably just more of James Parsons with his shirt off on Instagram. Is that the way you're going to go, Bryn?
It is, mate. It is. I think, you know, he's been working hard behind the back, and I think for the fact, you know, he's only going to grow. He's not retired. He's on a new road now, and so it's to get on that jockey's brand very soon. And I look forward to maybe possibly seeing more abs coming through at the back in 2022.
This is a stitch up.
I don't know how many times we can get that photo up in this show, but I'm going to be pushing for lots of times. And so maybe away from your Instagram post, Chipper, what's the one thing you want to see in rugby in 2022?
Just get through full seasons, I suppose. The hardest thing this year was seeing three teams not being able to complete their year. So, it's not going anywhere, and it's just – we've got to find a way to get these games played so that everyone can, one, enjoy watching them, but the players can get reward for the hard pre-seasons that they put in and actually get to do what they love, and that's playing footy.
Nice. Sorry, Ross. Super rugby returns. Go on, Bryn.
Sorry, Ross. We gave it a bit of stick to Big Chipper, but I guess two things that I actually am looking forward to for next year is actually seeing the Moana Pacifica in the Pacific competition, Super Rugby Pacific, because look, we have talked about at length how much Pacific nations have given to this part of the world, and so I've been able to see them, and hopefully they are competitive in the early parts of that competition, because look, there'd be nothing better at Mount Smart. I think about Mount Smart for the Moana Pacifica team. If they get a roll on, and you see the scenes of the Tongan team when they came here with the rugby league, and we know how much supporters there are in the community when it comes to the Pacific Nations, especially in Auckland. So I'm really looking forward to that. And for me as well, it's the Australian teams in our competition being more competitive. I think, you know, the Super Rugby AU, they had great domestic rivalries. And, you know, you look at their Reds final that they had, it was a great encounter and was really close down to the end. But I think, you know, for them, you'd like to think David Rennie would want to see the Australian teams being a lot more competitive and winning games in New Zealand and against New Zealand teams in 2022.
So that's your prediction for Super Rugby Pacific, is it? Maybe a tighter contest, and maybe a contest not won by a New Zealand team, Bryn?
Oh, I think, look, the New Zealand teams are going to be hard to beat. And look, that's, you know, just if you look at the fact of how they play and how consistent we've been over the years. But I think, look, the Australian team in general, and what David Rennie's been able to implement in that team. And the great thing about that environment is they'll be able to go off to their Super Rugby franchise and be able to, upskill other people within their Super Rugby environments of what they learned at the Wallabies. And so I think, and the fact that they have played the New Zealand teams and have a better understanding of how we play again, because look, we did have that time where we didn't play them due to COVID, and they had an introduction to be able to play us again and understand what it is to play Kiwi teams. But I would like to think, Ross, that it's going to be a lot more competitive for the fact that that Trans-Tasman this year, they were playing good footy. And even though the results weren't put in against the New Zealand teams, you'd like to think the learnings and the kind of experience that they did play the New Zealand teams, it'll sit them a lot better coming into 2022 next year.
So Crusaders centurion Bryn Hall, a master of handing favouritism to somebody else. Who wins Super Rugby Pacific next year?
Oh, look, I think we talked about it at length last week. I think we've always got aspirations to win competitions. And look, I think we've been fortunate enough to have a lot of experience around that and what that looks like. But, you look at the Blues and how well they're recruiting and having that win in Trans-Tasman as well. They're probably a team that I think, would probably be front runners other than ourselves. And you look at any other New Zealand team as well. The Chiefs will have Brodie Retallick back, and there's been some great signings and other New Zealand franchises. And then, look at the Reds and the Brumbies as well. They've been successful in that Trans-Tasman. They could get a good start next year. Hopefully, it's a full competition. It's not going to be Super Rugby Aotearoa to start with and Super Rugby AU to start with. Hopefully, it can be a full competition. But, those from the Australian competition, I'd still have to think the Brumbies and the Reds would be someone that could push it close as well.
I honestly just think every team's a chance. I think there's been good recruiting in the off-season, especially of the Kiwi teams. I certainly think those two Aussie sides and the Reds and the Brumbies have got squads decent enough to for a finals berth. So I think it's exciting with the two new teams, the sort of unknown of what they could bring as well. So I don't think you can ever go into Super Rugby confident, but I think if you're within those environments, there's enough around you to believe that it could be your team that wins. But my heart will always be supporting the Blues, no doubt about that. But as long as the New Zealand side wins, I'll be happy.
Well done.
You're kidding, Jumper, mate. You got that Blues jersey at the back, mate. Just tell it how it is. You've recruited well.
Mate, that's hard earned, brother. Well, that one right there, that's hard earned, mate.
Okay, and on that typical note, that is a great way to end the Aotearoa Rugby Pod for another year. Thank you all for joining us, whether you're listening or watching online with Rugby Pass or you're watching on Sky. We really appreciate you tuning in. The boys put in a lot of effort. So thank you to Jipper. Thank you to Bryn for the effort that you put in to making sure people get really cool analysis and good insights. Thank you also to Kingsley Hockley, who's kept us going, our director, when we're all over the place. Alex and Ra from Rugby Pass for producing the show. You guys have done a wonderful job. And for me, Ross Carl, thank you all for watching. We'll see you all again next year with the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. Have a wonderful Christmas and New Year's. Mā te wā.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.